Wagwan, everybody. Welcome to the Dis Afemi History Podcast, where we'll be speaking about history and as well family history and how history relates in terms of Caribbean people for the present as well as in the past, and how in the past, what that does and brings forth for what we are going through at present, and what we can learn from our history, from our family, and take that moving forward. So I do hope you enjoy the podcast. And if you like it, please ensure to subscribe, like, and review. Thank you.
In today's episode featuring Kofi PCE, who is an author, blogger, writer, and podcaster, and publisher. With your host, Wendy Aris, and in the discussion, we'll be diving into the blog post of Beautiful African Hair, Please Stop Using the Other N-Word. So let's have a listen.
Thank you so much, Kofi PCE, for coming on to the podcast, Dis Afemi History, and to discuss your blog post, Beautiful African Hair, Please Stop Using the Other N-Word. So before we start, I'll just have you introduce yourself to the audience.
Okay. My name is, as she said, is Kofi PCE. I am an author, a ghostwriter, a writer, a publisher, independent research, and belong to various research groups such as my sorority clan, Kofi PCE research team, and a group that's called the Session Matter Nature, where we specialize in what y'all call the hieroglyph, but Remitch called them the Matter Nature. And a podcaster. That's me in a nutshell.
Perfect. Thank you. And I'll make sure to include those in the show notes for if people want to further delve into what you are working on at this time. So we'll start with, again, I always ask individuals that come on as to what was their why? Why did you want to explore this topic from this different lens?
Well, like I said, I specialize in West African culture, but in African culture in general, and the hair aspect, that was one aspect that I had never really touched into. I touched in all the other cultural and traditional things in Africa, whether it's Central Africa, West Africa, North Africa, and so forth. But also me hearing the word, the N-word a lot, the word nappy, right? So me hearing that word a lot and us using, and I'm guilty of that, me using that word as a young boy. I talk about that in my book as well with my cousin that I grew up with. But just hearing the N-word and us devaluing ourselves when it comes to our skin tone and our hair. So, you know, it prompted me to say, okay, well, let me venture further into this and see why we, you know, heavily hate ourselves when it comes to our hair and our skin. Because anytime we talk about our hair, it's always in a derogatory manner. And I know our ancestors centuries ago, I know they had no concept of what nappy were, or, you know, they had to love their hair. Plus the misconception of me growing up, there's always been a bad image of our people on the continent, you know, far as pot bellies, dark skin, you know, hair all over the place. So I just wanted to research that a little bit further and go in details behind it, because as I looked and studied certain traditions, there were certain things that I seen ritualistic that they was doing. So, you know, that sparked me to, you know, dive deep into it, you know, because I knew it had more than what we think. Also here in America, styling, like our women here with their hair, like they spend thousands of dollars on their hair. I mean, wigs, hundreds of dollars on their hair, you know, every week getting their hair done. So I know it was more than just looking good also, right? So.
No, definitely. It's, you know, this hair industry for people of African descent is a $1 billion industry. And of course, what you said in terms of this other N-word, the nappy, mm-hmm. It's not used in a very positive frame. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to when they're getting their hair combed as a young child. And if your hair was, you know, tough and nappy, it wasn't said in the most endearing or as a compliment. So, you know, in terms of would you discuss this other N-word, of course, nappy, and why it was used?
Well, you know, again, going to slavery. Like, my book is called Africa's Hair, Doing Before and After Slavery. So I talk about before, doing, and after slavery. So let's talk about during slavery for a minute. During slavery, you know, the N-word, this word was used, as other words was used, to dehumanize African people. Prior to the Atlantic slave trade, if we look at certain areas that the European came into the interior Africa, whether we look at Central Africa first and then we look at West Africa, let's look at Central Africa. I can't think of the Frenchman name, Peter. I can't pronounce his last name, but he put a book out, and he, as they was trading, and, you know, other Europeans were trading, they looked and they seen how these different ethnic groups in Africa was prideful in their hair and the different unique styles that they had. So they knew they took pride in their appearance, and they took pride, you know, in their hair. So this Frenchman wrote about these people he encountered who had prideful in their hair. And not even when you go to West Africa, it was the same thing far as with the trading. They seen the same thing, right? So once the Atlantic slave trade actually jumped off, they began to dehumanize these people. They want to, we know once we was, our ancestors was kidnapped, right? They were stripped a thorough knowledge of who themselves, right? So, so hair was also another thing. Skin was also another thing. So they do dehumanize them again to use this word nappy, because they started to say that our ancestors were animals, right? So the word nappy is a derogatory term. And through slavery, we not only were physically abused, but we were psychologically abused. So it left these psychological scars when it comes to our skin tone and our hair color. So we begin to use this word nappy, which is a derogatory term, which means woolly, which means kinky. And through early writings, you will hear the word not only nappy, as they describing our hair as animals or sheep like, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they use peppercorn, you know, tight roll, knotted hair, right? So this term has always been a negative term when it comes to describing us, right? They were always, like I said, describe us in that manner, you know, being derogatory. And through the years, we have taken on that, you know, because, like I said, we have been psychologically scarred. So now, as they describe ourselves, we believe that that's what we look like. That's what our hair look like. That's what we look like, you know, which goes back to what you talk about, the Billion Dollar Company. I talked about that also in my book, my last chapter. I give graphs and stats and statistics to talk about those things, you know, us being psychological scarred and us believing in what those people have said about us, and it's still been passed down. We're 400 and some years removed from slavery, but we still have those psychological scars where we believe that we are ugly. Like, I'm a dark skinned man. So we've been believed that dark skin is ugly, right? We've been believed that hair is ugly. Even when we look at in the early 60s, I can't think of the psychologist, but our psychologist in the early 60s, he did a study on imagery, right, with girls between the age of 5 to 11 or 12 years old, when he had black and white. So when he would ask the young African-American girl, or the black girl, or African descent girl, what girl is pretty? He asked the European girl that as well. They were pointing at the white girl. He had a black and a white girl. So when he would ask the white girl and the black girl, which girl has a good hair? They were pointing at the white girl. When they asked which girl has the bad hair, the white and the black girl will point at the black girl. They were asked which girl or which doll is ugly. They were pointing at the black girl. When they were asked which girl hair is, you know, is evil, they were pointing at the black girl, which, so it's been psychological scarred. You know, these things, and it's crazy. I just had a discussion with someone yesterday. A young lady was actually FaceTiming her daughter, and her daughter was playing with a white doll. So I asked her, why your young daughter does not have a doll that resembles her, right? You know, And she said, it doesn't matter. And I said, yes, it does matter, right? You know, because now you're teaching her early that, you know, beauty comes of the beauty standard. She has to measure the beauty standard by this European doll that has this blonde, straight, you know, straight hair. So, yes, I hope that answers your question. I kind of went on the tangent.
No, absolutely no. I agree with all what you're saying, Coffee, because, I mean, I know you said a lot there in terms of, especially with skin color, but definitely with hair. And that connection to as if we were animals.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, in the slave, you know, some of the slave laws, if we weren't even seen as people, we were seen as chattel property, right? So the fact that this too was used as a domination to totally have us disconnected from our history, from our past, it has been very effective even up to today, unfortunately. So yeah, it's a lot. So hair, you know, of course, has a significance in some African societies. Would you be able to walk us through as to what some of the styles is? And I'll just bring up some, what we have here.
Okay.
And then you can talk to what we can see. Let me just share.
It has a lot of significance. And I'll talk about this image in particular that you have up here in just a second. But hair has so many different significance, you know. There's different hairstyles that represent, you know, numerous things. And that is, you can identify another, like if you look at the Sudan people in East Africa, the Nuba people have 50 ethnic groups inside of those, right? 50 ethnic groups. So to identify those 50 different ethnic groups within this one Nuba society, you can identify an ethnic group by a certain hairstyle. Royalty, you can identify royalty by a certain hairstyle. One who is not married, you can identify them as not married. One who is an adult, you can identify them by a hairstyle. One who is an adolescent, you can identify. One who has just went through rites of passages. A priest, you can identify. This image in particular right here is the Himba people that you have up here. They are from Nubia, which is in South Africa. And this hairstyle, you have the hairstyle on the left and the hairstyle on the right. This particular hairstyle on the left, I actually shows, I think, probably further down or before, those people who study Kemet, or what y'all may refer to as Egypt today, right? This lock will be considered by Egyptologists a Haru lock. Right. And this Haru lock also represents the era of Wusir or Usir, right? Or the Nusibiti, which is the king's son. So, but in the Himba culture right here, it represents an adolescent boy, a young man. The same thing with this Himba boy with his plait braided to the back. This was represented that he's young. He's not an adult yet. Because in African culture and African society, like I said, there's different hairstyles that resemble adults. And what's the name? So these young boys have not went through their rites of passage yet. The rites of passage are the adult rites of passage. So in each culture in Africa, one must go through some type of rites of passage before they are able to be recognized as an adult in their culture or as an adult in their society. So if we were to go and visit, or we were to acclimate ourselves into this society, we would know that these two young men that we encounter is not even recognized as an adult in their society. So they would be young. We would know them as young men and not young adults yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then just these two here.
Yeah. Same thing. These are older adult. These are also men of the Himba tribe, right? So once one becomes an adult and gets married, he has his hair is not braided anymore. His hair is unbraided, and they wear these certain caps on their head. And this brother at the bottom that you see with his hair is unkempt, right? Unkempt hair means so many different things, and we'll talk about that a little bit when we talk about the ritualistic, you know, certain things, the traditions when it comes to hair. Well, we can touch on it now, because this picture right here is this guy here is in mourning. So he's in mourning. So up under the cap, this is the only time that he removes his cap. And then we're referring to the Himba man in the Himba culture. This is the only time that he will remove his headwear as in a stage of mourning. He has lost someone in his family. So this is why his hair is unexposed and it is unkempt. But we'll talk a little bit more about unkempt hair when we get a little bit further into the interview. But that's why the guy hair is unkempt right there at the bottom.
Okay. And then just this last one here.
Okay. This last one is the Basara. This is in Chad, image of women in Chad, right? And I wanted this picture to be up because there are so many myths when it comes to natural hair, right? I done heard it all, you know, about hair our hair is bad. Natural hair is unkempt. Natural hair is dirty. Natural hair can't be, you know, you can't grow natural hair. You have to put these chemicals and so forth into your hair in order for something into your hair to grow. Natural hair can't grow. So I wanted to show an image, but in my book, I show further images and go in detail about these women that's in Chad and the process that they use in order to make their hair grow, right? So in the natural remedies from the natural resources that grows in the ground, like this image, they use something called chiba powder. And chiba powder, you can see chiba powder. If I guarantee you 90 to 95% of the hair growth things that are on the shelf, when you look at the ingredients have chiba powder in it. Just look it up.
Okay.
Majority of things, I'm not saying all, but majority of the hair growth things that they have in the hair industry, it has chiba powder in it. So in the mountains in Chad, they had this particular flower that has a flower bud on it. And they would take this bud from off of this flower and these buds, and then they would take them and they would boil them. I go in depth about that also book where they would take them. And I show you actually images of them actually taking them and putting them in a tray, putting water and actually boiling them and putting oil and other different things in them to actually turn them into this type of, and grind them up to turn them into this type of powder. And put, you know, certain oils and stuff on it. And then they would take it a whole day. They would take this process and they would groove it into these women's hair. This was a ritual that they were actually doing with their hair to actually groom it into their scalp and into their hair. Then they would take it and braid them into these long braids into their hair. So I wanted to show that, you know, hey, natural hair can be grown. There are certain things that they use within nature in order to make their hair grow long. So I wanted to dispel one of those myths that you can't grow natural hair. Natural hair, you can't grow it long. So that's just another misnomer, right?
Yeah, definitely. No, thanks for indicating that, because yes, that is definitely something that, and again, I guess going on to, you know, what did the type of hairstyle would indicate to the greater world of that person and or their status. I know you mentioned some of it, but if you need to go into greater detail now.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you want me to talk about a lot of the ritualistic
styles
when it comes to hair. Okay, so let's go back to the unkempt hair. So you will see in Nigeria, if you look at the Yoruba people, you go to Ghana as well as Madagascar, these practices of unkempt hair, those who lost a family member or someone that was close to them, they would use unkempt hair. Like in certain women, this unkempt hair would be for mourning stages. And also to, like in Ghana, this particular unkempt hair was to repel other men away from them to also let them in mourning. So it was because, see, we have been taught that our brothers and sisters on the continent that, you know, again, that the hair was bad, the hair was dirty, and it was a misconception that we didn't comb our hair, you know. So, and also in my book, I show and demonstrate a lot of images of them actually combing their hair. Hair was actually, and still is today, is actually a place to go and socialize with and gather with. So they took pride in combing their hair. They took pride in combing their hair, and you see it with the different styles, right? So the unkempt hair was to show that this woman or this man was in mourning, or to repel other men away from them. Even if I had to stumble upon the woman, I wouldn't find that woman attractive in my in this particular culture, even if I didn't know she was in mourning because her hair was unkempt. But also, I would probably be careful because also in other African cultures, unkempt hair will also means that this person may be unstable, may have some types of bad behavior because, again, in African culture, what people may consider, I don't like to use the word African spirituality.
Yes.
I don't like the word African tradition or religion, even though some people do. And even some of my counterparts and my research team use those words. I have a book called Beautiful Lessons about Kimoyo. So I don't use those words because they don't have agency. So we're trying to push the word Kimoyo, which comes out of the Congo, comes out of Central Africa. And this word describes the culture better. And we have agency over the word, because when you go look at these words that we utilize, those words, we don't have agency over those words because we didn't create those words. Even though some of our ancestors that have passed, they have took this word on. When you go look up John Mbiti, he's from out of Kenya. Or you go look at Oduluwa, who's out of Nigeria. These two individuals help coin and push the word African tradition or religion. So a lot of our people in America, a lot of our people in the Caribbean and certain islands, a lot of people that are in Africa use these terms, but these terms does not come from us. So I don't like to use those terms. But also in mourning, shaving the hair. And certain cultures also, you will see if you go to Senegal, if you look at Senegal, you look at Gambia, and those areas in West Africa, you will see, and even East Africa, in certain cultures, you will see the shaving of the hair. So this was also another ritual that they would do within mourning. So they would shave the hair off. And this would also let you know that, okay, there a person is in mourning. But also in certain cultures, you will see not only the shaving of the hair, but they will shave if there's hair on the body anywhere, they will completely shave their hair completely. This will also let you know that they are in a stage of mourning. But also when you look at shaving of the hair, there was also a tradition and a ritual that took place where shaving of the hair, when we go to the rites of passages, the first rite is the naming rite, right? So we know in African culture, women are named later, men are named first. Sometimes in most cultures, you will see the woman named first and then the men named. So, and this is 9 to 12 to 13 days later, you know, that they give the name. And this name is also not only given by the family, but some by the community as well. And we know that our ancestors had multiple names. And I have friends on the continent today have multiple names. When they say their names, I mean, they'll go for at least 2 minutes, you know, talking about their names, right? And so in the naming rites of passages, the child, once the community comes together doing the naming ceremony in the rites of passages, they will shave the head if the baby has a hair on the head, will shave the hair completely, right? Because we believe that the ancestor is coming back. So the ancestor is leaving from the spiritual realm and to the physical. So now we're creating a pathway by shaving the child head. So now that spirit can enter in, you know, by the shaving of the head. And the same thing doing the funeral rites. Like that's also another part of the rites of passage, is the funeral rite. So now when the funeral rite, one head has to be shaved, right? So to open up a passage back to from the physical back into the spiritual world. So you will see those things as well. But also, if you look at a depiction of African culture and African art, I also talk about that. I know I keep saying my book, Africa's Hair, but I show you a lot of pictures in my book of depictions. But you can see this all over Africa where in their arts and their drawings where the heads are big. Right. Because they believe that the head is the center point of the body. Right. The head is the most important or the most essential key to the body. Right. Yeah. And the hair sits on top of this most important or essential part of the body. So they also believe in certain cultures that the hair was antennas or the hair was the connection to the divine. Right. So this, so that was another thing, you know, of the importance of having hair was it was an extension to the divine. We could communicate to divine because this head was the most essential part of which it is, you know, the most essential part. So you will see the depiction of the head being bigger than the body because they felt like that the head was the most important part as well as the hair was the most important part because it sits on the highest part of the important key of the body. You will also see like in royal statuses, you will see like these big, gigantic hairstyles. And a lot of these gigantic, elaborate hairstyles, I would know that this woman or this man here, he's connected some type of royal status because of these certain different hairstyles, these high hairstyles that they wear. Some of these hairstyles that we see, we're actually wearing some of these hairstyles today. We think some of these hairstyles today is a new phenomenon, you know, but it's not. You know, even when it comes to dyeing our hair, you know, it's not a new phenomenon. You know, when you look at the Maasai people in East Africa, the Maasai people, they had a ritual for it with their warriors. I would know if I was in that area, I'm encountering a Maasai warrior because of the red. This hair is completely red and it's braided, right? So what I would distinguish in these people that this guy here is a warrior because he wore a certain thin types of braids in their hair. This was it was a ritual for them to take this red clay, this red ochre, right, and butter and mix it and dye their hair from the roots all the way back. So that was another thing. So dyeing is not a new phenomenon, but you see red ochre in every culture on the continent of Africa. If their hair had some type of redness in it, it was that red clay, that red ochre that they would use because you see that in East Africa. But if I take you into Sudan, you will see that amongst other people too. I take you and you look at the Hamra people, the same way in the Sudan, you will see their hair has this red texture. So we think a lot of braids. We think braids is a new phenomenon. So all these things is something that we've been doing forever. And like I'm saying, like you said earlier, we do things and don't know why we doing some of these things, right? So it's just been embedded in us.
Yeah, no, definitely. And what you're mentioning is just leading into the next question here, because in spite of, you know, the horrors of slavery, the enslaved Africans, you mentioned a couple of the stuff that was still passed on, part of the ancestral memories of hair. Mm-hmm. Is there any other examples that you wanted to speak with or speak on to this?
About the ancestral, me about the hair?
Yeah, what was done in the past, which is actually happening now. Did you mention the dyeing of the hair?
Yeah,
is there anything
dying
else?
Dyeing of the hair, like braids. But let me talk about the braids because
yes,
when you start, and we'll talk about locks. I want to talk about locks and braids. So, but I want to, people, when you start doing research and doing slavery, like before slavery, there were always, they braided their hair. That was also a hairstyle. And I show that prior via the Atlantic slave trade. But once we get to the slave trade, those styles that we used to braid our hair, we took some of those things on those plantations. Yeah. But doing on the plantation, braids began to get a bad name. So when you start looking in the early 30s, always to the early 60s, you start to see braids become a factor of where it's attached to slavery, right? We know it has come back onto the scene, but prior to that, a lot of people wouldn't resort to getting their hair braided because they resorted to that. But you have to understand, they utilize braiding the hair as a style that you will most probably see is because we had no tool. Like in my book, I talk about the invention of the comb. The comb was created 5,000 years ago. So I talk about an area that they say that the cones may, the areas that the cone may be invented. Kemet is one particular place where I show you primary cones, but I also show you primary cones throughout the book of certain cones that we use. So we invented these things to comb our hair. So when we're now that we're in captive, there's no, we have less resources to do anything with. So we couldn't comb our hair. So braiding the hair was a technique and a style that was used, you know, and was easy. Braid your hair, we can keep my hair up for 2 or 3 weeks and we can go on, because and because prior to me being captured, I come from a culture where combing the hair was a normal thing. Styling the hair was a normal thing. These were things that we did, right? These were things that we would get up. And like I said, this was also like a thing where we can get out and go socialize with, right? So, and they seen these things too, where every day these people would get up, wash their hair, comb their hair, style their hair, and socialize while they doing these, while they doing these things, right? So that also kills the theme of African hair or our ancestors' hair being dirty. Our hair is being unkept. So this was a normal thing. So they go from this to this extreme where we have nothing. We don't have anything to put in our hair. Like certain things that you start to see, like straighten the hair. Like even let's go back to the Himba people, not the Maasai people for a minute. We talk about the braiding of the hair. They will use certain things from the flower fluids in order to straighten their hair before they will braid their hair. So they will use cow urine. They will use flower stuff from the flowers, liquid from the flowers. They will use water. They will use butter. And they will mix these things up and to straighten their hair straight in order to style it and style it and braid it. So now on the plantation, they will use this resin stuff, this stuff that you actually put in the lanterns to light the lanterns, you know, using these dangerous things to actually put in their hair to actually smooth it or straighten it where they can style it, style it completely. So braids became synonymous with slavery, right? And a lot of people have a misconception of that's where that style was created, but that also is a misnomer and a mistruth. Those styles go further back before we encounter a European in the 14th century or even in the 15th century. And even locks, you know, locks is a style that has been created when you look at the Humber or the Himba people in two different locations, one in west, one in east. Those people had locks prior to going into Jamaica. Not saying that the people in Jamaica is not African people. We know our people spread it everywhere, especially doing via the slave trade. We was dropped off in so many places, right? So, but a lot of the styles resemble some people say that was a rebellious style, and that style was created through rebellions, which is untrue, which it is a rebellious style, because the locks, even the afro, we know in the 60s and the 70s, the pick, when we talk about the comb, that pick became synonymous with rebellion, right? And they patented that. You know, they ended up taking it and patenting it, and we bought it like crazy. But that and the afro became a rebellion against the society, against, you know what I'm saying, the tremendous things that we go through in these countries, right? You know, the locks was the same thing, but locks was a style way before we even encountered it became. Now, when you get to Jamaica, it became rebellion, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it became a rebellion's hairstyle at that time. But the Himba and the Humber people, they use like the Humber people, even extensions. Extensions. Yeah. I know I'm going. We think the hair extensions is a new phenomenon too, but our ancestors would take cow hair and make extensions. And I think it's on that in that article, and it's also in my book, I show other images of them actually taking the cow hair and making extension locks with it. to make the hair longer. But also, you know, that was also a style when you would see they would use the extension to the back. That would also let you know that of the woman that I am ready to be married now. You know, it would let you know that I'm ready. And the locks in the front, if we had a daughter and they would put the extension and lock the hair would be over the face. Even the braids will be covering the face. That will let you know that I'm not a lady yet. I'm not a lady. I'm still an adolescent. I am not recognized by my community as an adult.
Okay.
Yet, so they will use those. And then when you get to the Himba people, they had these small, tiny locks that they would use. But they were, both of them would use water. Both mm-hmm. of them would use butter. Butter and oil was used a lot when creating these different hairstyles. Palm oil is another one that was used a lot in there. So you would see these locks. And then later, it became a rebellious hairstyle when we got to Jamaica. You know, a lot of Europeans would describe the styles. Like, a lot of people have this taste for the word dreadlock. I don't have a disdain for it, because the word, it comes from dreadful. Those Europeans that, you know, when this style became popular as a rebellion style, right, they would say that, oh, these people, and another word that they would try to use derogatory, yeah. dreadful, you know, and dreadful turned into the word dreadlock, right? So, you know, that was some of the things that, you know, right there, and that we use back then that we are still using now. Locks are popular. Braiding the hair is popular. Even high hairstyles, you know,
yes.
not a new phenomenon. Like, you know, even in an article, I show you like some of the, and I show a lot more in the book, royal statuses. People who have these royal statuses have these hair. Even going to locks now, they have something now. I don't know if it's popular over there, but in Florida, most states in Florida, but it's getting popular here where I'm at. But in Florida, there are something that they call wicks. And these wicks are these big old thick locks. And these thick locks.
Yeah.
Right. So if you look at the Ashanti priest, back then, the Ashanti priest had these big thick locks that the people wearing today, they call wicks. They thinking this is something anew.
Yeah.
A lot of things that we do, they think this is a new phenomenon. We've been doing these things way back. So these wicks and these big matted locks, this is not or what they call freeform locks.
Yes.
We were doing these. We're our ancestors been doing these things. This is nothing new. You think you're creating something new when this is something old. So I'd show those things too. I think I showed one in that article of in a priest.
Yeah.
With the, you know, so I wouldn't. But also with these matted locks or these thick locks that we're calling wicks, also. In certain cultures, it wouldn't be the priest wearing these. It would be the executor, executionary. So I would know, okay, with this brother here, I ain't gonna play with this brother over here. This brother over here, yeah, you know, I'm gonna respect him over here. I'm not gonna play with him because he's an executor. These are things that he does. He gets dirty. He gets dirty. So, but yeah, those are some of the things, you know, from here, you know, from there to now that we're still doing.
No, thank you, because that's good to know that nothing that we're doing new is coming from a place that was already existing before. And so, and as finally, as we close, what final thoughts that you want to give to the listeners or the viewers, just to say in terms of with the N word for hair, but how to kind of embrace all of this and not look at it in terms of a negative lens?
Well, you know, first I'll tell people, you know, be grateful, be appreciative, you know, of who you are, you know, embrace your hair, embrace your skin tone, right? Our hair is grown in this certain type of way, which our hair is grown more than in this type of way, because Africa does not only have what we consider tight coil hair, but we have curly and wavy hair. So I talk about 75% of African people on the continent or people of African descent people, 75% having coil or kinky hair, but 15% also having wavy and curly hair, which I show though when you go to the Ethiopian, if you look at Ethiopians and Somalians. But I just want to say, just embrace your hair, you know. My personal thing, stop using the N word, because even we have taken that word on. If you have, I have no problem with it. Take it and embrace it in a positive manner, because now we got nappy whip, we got nappy curl, we got all types of beauty supplies that we took the word and flipped the word. Even if you flip the word, I appreciate it. I won't particularly use it in particularly, but I just say, just appreciate who you are. You know what I'm saying? Respect who you are, you know, and share with your friends and your family that you are beautiful no matter what, you know, no matter what color your skin tone is, no matter what, no matter weight, your hair grow out your hair. Your hair is the most important piece on your body. You know, also, you know, as far as respecting your hair, you know, learn more about what your hair actually does, right? Learn more about it. You'll be able to appreciate it more, integrate it into your culture, because we all have certain cultural practices. You know, incorporate some type of practice of hair into your hair, you know, into your culture. You know, and that may be just teaching your children, you know, okay, to embrace the way that their hair, embrace the way that their hair grow. You know, show them things of what our ancestors did with their hair. You know, show them that it's a connection to the divine, right? So, you know, again, I'm rambling, but just embrace your hair. Just embrace your hair. Embrace who you are. Respect who you are. And, you know, find out more about those different practices of our ancestors did ritualistic with their hair.
No, thank you so much, Coffee. I really do appreciate it. I appreciate your time coming on and speaking about this, about your article. Mm-hmm. And maybe in the future, we'll be discussing your book in greater detail. But thank you.
Hoped you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please make sure to like, follow, subscribe, and write a review for the episode wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you.